Now, recently, on a cold and windy winter's day, our reporter Michelle Brown went down to the Maharees to find out about how the community became central in saving the dunes there. In this report, you will hear from Eleanor Turner, who is the biodiversity officer from Kerry County Council, and Dr. Therese Higgins, lecturer in wildlife biology at Munster Technological University, or MTU. But first, Michelle met with Martha Farrell, chair and co-founder of the Maharees Conservation Association.
We are here on Mahara Big Cut. It's a beach on Brendan Bay, and we are actually on the longest beach on the west coast of Ireland. You've got Brendan Mountain across the bay, and we're also overlooked by Beano's Gee. Maharees is actually a tombolo, which is a landform that involves at least one offshore island. In the case of Maharees, we think it's two offshore islands that are joined to the mainland by a sandy spit. So we are told that it was deposited around 10,000 years ago, and this area is dominated by this spectacular sand dune system. So it's hills of wind-blown sand, and they are vegetated by, I suppose you can see the marram grass, but actually the marram grass is an anchor plant for this really diverse flora and fauna. The area has a very strong built and cultural heritage too. So we have a monastic site out on Eilean Tánaig. We have the remnants of a 13th century church in Kilshannig. We have traditions that have probably died out in other parts, like we still have the Wren in Maharees on the 26th of December. We have traditional musicians. We have curragh making, curragh racing, and the fishing heritage that we have, and I think the community is very proud of that. The frequency of the big storms is increasing. It's all about, I suppose, how a storm might coincide with the tide. So if it coincides with a big tide or a spring tide, it will really wreak a lot of havoc with the sand dune system. Our particular crisis came in the winter of 2015-16, when we had a lot of wind-blown sand blow up over the sand dune onto the main road, and it blocked it, and the community really was locked in.
How many people living there in this community?
Approximately 300 full-time, year-round residents in Maharees.
So you were cut off from the mainland?
Well, the community would have to wait until the council came to clear the road of the sand, and you could go to work or you could go to school again. And that's really why we formed. There was a crisis meeting at the time in the village Castle Gregory, and around 200 people came to the meeting. And Martin Lynch, the first chair of Maharees Conservation, you know, stood at the top of the room and said, you know, we really need to start a group up, and he took nominations from the floor. And so we started out as a group of 15 people, and we were really just trying to identify solutions and try to identify people who could help us. So we started out life as a group very focused on keeping the road open. How could we deal with the issue of erosion here on Brendan Bay? But we've very much pivoted as well in the direction of educating ourselves, our community, our visitors on the fragility and the importance of the sand dune system, because honestly, none of us knew. We didn't really fully understand it at the time, and we're really grateful to National Parks and Wildlife Service, the Kerry County Council Biodiversity Officer, and MTU for helping us educate ourselves in what we had. And while you might visit the place and see this beautiful view, these amazing beaches, and you'll see the sand hills, but actually it makes you take a second look, and then you appreciate it all the more.
So my name is Therese Higgins. I'm a lecturer in MTU on the Kerry campus, where I deliver on the wildlife biology course. The habitats here are absolutely wild and absolutely dependent on the wind and the sea and the sand and the sunshine. And so they're not easy to convert into something else, whether it's forestry or very rich agricultural land or to do big developments on. So I suppose because of that, they've survived here through the centuries. But sand dunes are really important in coastal areas like the west coast of Europe and of Ireland, because we have this boundary between the sea and the land. And of course, the sea has all of this energy and power, and water moves things, and wind and the air moves things. So in places like this, we're lucky in a way in that they move things onto the land, and the thing that they move is sand. And that creates a landscape of dune-dominated habitats, and they're quite complex. So depending on exactly where you are with proximity to the sea or the land behind it, you'll get a different set of environmental conditions that support really different kinds of wildlife. But the marum is a fascinating species because it actually needs to be drowned in sand to thrive and do really well. So if we're losing sand, then the marum gets weaker. And of course, it's the roots of the marum, and they go down metres, and they're holding the sand together and therefore creating kind of a stable environment then for other things to come in and live there. So things that you find towards the front of the dunes or in the first parts of the marum, like the sea holly, like the sea beet, like sea rocket, things like that. And then behind that kind of moving dune, which is quite a dynamic system, the plants there can recolonise again, I suppose, if they get disturbed. And these dunes are not designed by nature to be there forever and ever and ever, amen. So they're designed to have space, really. Nature wants them to have space to be created and to break down a little bit and to build up again, ideally build up and up. So behind what we call the yellow dunes or the moving dunes, you get this really special habitat, which is fixed dune or grey dune. They're the dunes where you get a little bit more humus in the soil, so they support a wider selection of plants and animals than the moving dune, which is really just sand and marum. So they're extremely important for things like orchids, for lots and lots of plants that feed our invertebrate wildlife, like our butterflies, our graylings, our small blues. You know, like the small blue butterfly was always just one on my list. I didn't really think about it until I read recently how endangered it is, and it really is restricted to coastal areas, and dunes are hugely important for it. It only feeds on the kidney vetch. The caterpillar will only grow on the leaves of that one plant. So dune habitats like this and other coastal areas, they're so important for these. And of course, they're right at the front of, you know, the rising sea levels and the increasingly fierce storms and the higher storm height that's being impacted as our weather gets more and more extreme, strong and more frequent in terms of these events. So they're quite vulnerable habitats because of that, and yet they're wonderful. The variety of flowers and invertebrates in particular then that use those flowers here in the summer months is stunning. There's so much colour. They're all very small, so it's quite easy to walk past and miss it. But once you stop and walk slowly, it's really very, very rich. Lots and lots of different kinds of plants, including mosses and liverworts. There's a really rare liverwort here, the petalwort. There's only, 20 or 30 sites for it in Ireland, and some of the biggest populations in Ireland actually are on the sand dunes around Kerry, including the Maharees. And it looks like a little lettuce about the size of your baby fingernail. So it's very cute, but it's a divil to try and catch because it's deciduous, so it dies back in the drier parts of the year. But that will only grow in the dune slacks. And it will only grow in places that there's a little bit of disturbance, but not too much. And then if you've got eutrophication from cow dung or fertilizer from farming or anything like that, the soil becomes too rich, and the more kind of common plants get in, so the more wild things then don't survive there. So, yeah, so it's a magical place in terms of the kinds of wildlife and the amount of it that you get.
And, of course, there's the natterjack.
Oh, the natterjack. The natterjack is a really special treat that Kerry people get to experience that other people around the country don't. And, you know, they've been here for 10,000 years, and they think that they had a much broader distribution right around the Dingle Peninsula and the Iver Peninsula coastal areas. But now, of course, the range is shrinking and shrinking because, kind of like some of the other wildlife here, they're quite specialist. They don't travel very far, so they won't cross over like rich agricultural grassland or roads or rivers or anything like that. So they spend their winter at the moment. They're all snug, wrapped up in their burrows underground. And then when the temperatures increase, I think 7 degrees might be the magic number, they'll start to wake up, and the adults will crawl out and go to these slacks, so these ponds, essentially these ephemeral water bodies that accumulate in the bottom of the fixed dunes, and they'll go there for mating. And when they come, they have such a party. The noise that they make is deafening, and it's fabulous how it happens. If you're out here at night, and you'll hear one, then you'll hear another, and then you'll hear another, and next of all, there's hundreds of them, and they're rah, 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 really croaking. And what it is the males going, "Oi, ladies, I'm here. You know, where are you?"
You both heard these as well, have you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Dick Warner was down here, and let me see if I can get a little bit of this going, just to give people a flavour of it. So you've heard this?
That sounds like one.
I was going to say, yeah, that's the brave boy who's willing to go out on the dance floor first. And then you sit and wait.
So it's bigger than that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it's coming from all corners around you. And it fills the night and it reaches a crescendo. And then I don't know what makes it happen, but every now and then it just tails off and it all goes quiet again. And then if you wait a while, another brave fella will start and they'll all start.
So I'm Eleanor Turner. I'm the Biodiversity Officer with Kerry County Council. I started in the role just about a year and a half ago now. I'm from Kerry. I grew up down in Caradineal on the other peninsula, but we also have similar ecosystems there. We have a beautiful sand dune in Derrynane. We have Natterjack Toad. So I suppose the Maharees is very close to my heart for that kind of connection. A lot of the work that I do is in kind of community engagement, working with groups like the Maharees that are operating within their own local communities, trying to raise awareness or implement conservation actions. It's very hard to start in a community with such a big issue as coastal erosion in a sand dune, and where do you get going, what actions can you take, who do you talk to. All of that is quite hard to navigate. So having a group like the Maharees that have for, what is it now, 7-8 years or so,
nearly nine years,
have been kind of walking that road. I know that there's been knowledge exchange trips with the Maharees in groups all over Ireland, so it's incredibly invaluable to have the expertise in the group. And just, yeah, really proud to have it happening in Kerry. I suppose the area here, there is an SAC here, which is a special area of conservation, and an SPA, which is a special protection area. So the SACs are designated for particular habitats and species, and the SPAs are about bird conservation. So you really have it all in the Maharees. I often say that in Kerry, we have a large proportion of our land area is designated as SACs and SPAs. So we really are kind of blessed with the wildlife that you find here. So yeah, I suppose in the Maharees, looking at what they're doing and the learnings that are being taken from that into other communities is incredibly valuable. From my role, I suppose we have supported it through different funding programs. We have funding through the National Parks and Wildlife Service and through the department, and that has funded some of the chestnut fencing. Every year we try and support some of their education and awareness activities, which are like the Biodiversity Week events. I suppose the intention really is to just try and keep them going, you know, and help out as much as we can within the remit that we have as the council for these kind of projects. Yeah, and the link that I have then is kind of anything that I can do to come out and help.
And it's really important that a community action group will attach themselves to people with expertise, I suppose.
There is expertise available with our NPWS conservation rangers that are on the ground in all of our local areas. We have 6 in Kerry. We've got 2 DCOs, so there's 2 areas there, North and South Kerry. So there is a staff available to contact for advice, particularly if you're working in an area that is within an SAC or an SPA. It's hugely important that you're getting in touch with the conservation rangers and you're just floating your ideas past them. You know, they're there to help. You're trying to do the same thing, essentially. You're all concerned about conserving the ecosystem that's there. And there is a lot of information about do's and don'ts. So it's a great starting point is to contact your local ranger with any concerns that you have. And discuss with them. Definitely for a community group coming together, like Teresa's great example here. We have an MTU in Kerry. Like, it's such a great facility with such a broad range of expertise there. Getting in touch with them, getting someone out to give a talk or do a walk, you might find things that you didn't know before. Like Martha always said, we walked over the dunes and we didn't know what plants or what animals were there. Whereas when you bring someone out that maybe has that expertise, it suddenly starts to embed that expertise within the community. And once that understanding starts to develop within your local group, that's when you can really start to take on things like these big projects of protecting an entire habitat or an entire ecosystem.
And Martha said that you found them all very helpful, you know, the councils, the MPWS, and that there was funding as well.
There is more funding being driven towards these kind of projects. I suppose, look, it's the time we live in. We declared a biodiversity crisis in 2019. We have just so much information about how negatively things have been impacted by human impact. It's driving a kind of a step change in how we're addressing things, I suppose. So we're seeing more funding being put towards these kind of actions. We're seeing a lot of value being placed on the local connection that people have and the value of local communities in taking ownership of their place and implementing these kind of stewardship programs. Like, the reality is, like, I'm biodiversity officer for all of County Kerry. Like, I can't possibly be on the ground everywhere, but having people who are engaged in their local environments are able to come to me and highlight issues that maybe then can be taken forward towards developing a project or a conservation measure or contacting a researcher to find out what's going on. So yeah, there's more interest on the ground, there's more funding coming through, and I suppose those things are kind of coming together and creating this situation we have now where you're seeing a lot of groups being able to accomplish a lot of positive actions.
And Martha was saying, like, it's very simple mitigation measures can make such a huge difference for coastal erosion.
Yes, usually when we're talking about, particularly with sand dune habitats, what we're trying to do is remove the human impact. So I suppose the Maher Beg cut here is a good example. It was human activity that was creating the damage to the dunes. And so in taking actions to remove that and manage that, we've seen the dunes be restored. And that's really the tack that we take in these kind of coastal areas. We're not going to jump in and completely change the whole area or put up big walls or anything like that. It's looking at what is the human impact there and how can we manage or mitigate for that or remove it completely and then do some restoration work.
And it's things like stopping people camping, stopping people parking where they shouldn't park, and movable chestnut fencing.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do a number of kind of temporary car parks during the summer, particularly down here in Maharees. And that is about stopping people parking on sensitive dune habitats. I suppose historically it was kind of a free for all. I know for sure down in Derrynane it was a similar thing back in the day. The more that we know about these ecosystems, the more we realise the negative impact that has. And so it's about changing people's behaviour and saying, OK, previously we used to wild camp, we used to park on the dunes. Now we're not going to do that. We need to remove those impacts so that we can allow the dunes to restore themselves or actively restore them ourselves.
So don't despair, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh no, the future is bright.
That special report by Michelle Brown. That's pretty much all we have time for tonight. Visit the website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. We'll do it all again next week at the same time. Until then, goodbye, goodbye, goodbye.